Today's guest is here to discuss a product she was inspired to create during a backpacking trip to the Alpine Lakes Wilderness in Washington State. While enjoying a sunset over Robin Lakes, she stumbled upon a pile of toilet paper and started researching Leave No Trace options for toilet paper in the wilderness. Are you wondering what the results of this research was? I am. I want to welcome with you to our podcast today the founder of Kula Cloth, Anastasia Allison. Anastasia, welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Now, Anastasia, people may be asking, okay, Papa Bear, you're a guy, you're a dude. Why are you talking about this? And I will say this, because early on when I started this podcast, when I was like maybe less than 100 people listening per episode, I had a woman reach out to me and she came on the podcast and talked about the lack of items available to women in general. Specifically, though, we got into a conversation about the clothing. It's, you know, men's clothing, and we'll try to make it fit women. We'll make the color so they can fit women. And that inspired me to start watching people like yourself, following what you're doing, innovators in the outdoor industry that are specifically addressing females. But before we go any further, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I would love to. And I also, I'm sure, share a story, but your tale of, you know, you being the male founder of a podcast, I think it's really relevant to spreading the good word about these products that do exist for people, because the very first backpacking trip that I ever went on was led by a man. Who I didn't feel comfortable asking about what to do with hygiene in the backcountry. And I know that if that gentleman, now he was a kind person, but I know that if he had been more open, or if I had felt more of a sense of openness from him to ask those questions, then I would not have ended up in the situation that I did on my first backpacking trip, which was a situation where I actually forgot to bring toilet paper because I didn't know that I needed it. And I ended up stealing it from my tent mate. So the universe has a funny sense of humor. I now own a reusable toilet paper company. but a little bit about my backstory. So I started volunteering with the National Park Service when I was 12 years old at a park in Pennsylvania called Hopewell Furnace National Historic Site. And from the age of 11, I wanted to be a park ranger. I was bullied pretty significantly as a kid, and being outside was always the place where I felt like I could be myself. And park ranger was the name that I could give to a person who worked outside. And so I always told everybody I wanted to be a park ranger. Now, I went to college and kind of got distracted by the pre-med track, because I got to school and everybody was pre-med. So I thought, okay, I guess I should be pre-med too. So I became a pre-medical student in college. After I got out of college, I flunked my MCATs, was sort of in this awkward state of not knowing what I wanted to do with my life. And I was volunteering out at the national park, and the superintendent said, Anastasia, what do you want to do? And I looked around this beautiful place that I was, and I told him, I want to do this. Like, I want to do this. And he said to me, well, why don't you become a park ranger? Why don't you go to a park ranger academy and get training to become a park ranger? And it was almost like this long lost dream had come back. And instantly I knew, oh my gosh, how had I forgotten this? This is what I want to do. And I ended up moving to Washington State to attend a park ranger academy in Mount Vernon, Washington. And then at the time I was living on the East Coast. So I was living in Pennsylvania at the time, and I moved to Washington State. I ended up getting a job working for the state of Washington, and I served as a park ranger for 7.5 years on the Hood Canal until I was laid off from that job, which was pretty crushing for me. During the time that I was a park ranger was when I had really gotten into backpacking. I was always into hiking, but I sort of dove in to backpacking and hiking. And I had an opportunity to start teaching a beginner's backpacking class for a nonprofit here in Washington State called Washington Outdoor Women. And I started teaching a backpacking 101 class. And I taught that class for almost a decade. When I was laid off from my job as a park ranger, like I mentioned, I was really crushed. That was sort of my identity. I was the park ranger. And now who was I? And even though I had all these creative ideas, and even though I sort of dreamed of a career in the outdoor industry, I didn't know how to do it. And so I sort of looked at where I was, and I had been a law enforcement ranger for the state. And I thought, well, I guess law enforcement is the only thing that I could do. And so I ended up taking a job as a special agent for BNSF Railway. I actually was a railroad police officer for about 5.5 years, which was a great job until it wasn't. And I was sort of back in this repeating pattern of wanting something different and not really feeling fulfilled, and all the while feeling very called to these outdoor explorations. And it was somewhere in 2016, while hiking the Wind River High Route in Wyoming, that I was taking a photograph of my pea cloth as a joke to send to a friend. I had had this silly idea. I was going to take a whole series of photographs of my pea cloth and give them to her as greeting cards. I don't know what that says about me as a friend, but that's what I was doing. And it was in that moment that I had this idea, sort of taking a picture of this ugly scrap of fabric. Why isn't that a real piece of gear? And it just felt like a little lightning bolt went off in my mind. And that was the birth of Kula. It was not a smooth road from that point to where it is now. In fact, I didn't even really pursue it right away because I was scared. But that's sort of the brief history of how I got to just the idea.
Yeah, because there's two approaches, as I read in the introduction, right? There's toilet paper, and you know, every spring, those of us who live in winter areas that experience winter weather, we see toilet paper sprung all over the place. Yeah, that was part of your inspiration, right? How do we reduce that? And then for women, you know, there's the pea cloth, right? As I say, you know, a lot of times just a bandana pulled through the D-ring on their backpack or hanging off their backpack. So from there, Anastasia, you decided, no, there needs to be a specific piece of gear that
I did
will address this.
Yeah. And the reason for that was, as a backpacking instructor, so, you know, when I first started looking into this, as you indicated, it was inspired by a trip to the Alpine Lakes Wilderness, where I was just sort of disgusted by how much toilet paper I saw. I came home, did a Google search on Leave No Trace toilet paper options, and I read an article about using a bandana. And my initial reaction to that was, ew, gross, because the initial sort of shock value of reusable toilet paper is there's this ick factor there. And I was able to overcome that ick factor because I was a backpacking instructor. And I remember specifically thinking to myself, I should at least try this out and see if I like it, because at the very minimum, I could teach my students about it if it was something I liked. And I was shocked at how much I loved using a pea cloth. I mean, it totally revolutionized my hygiene in the backcountry, because the only other options were either drip drying or packing in and out a ton of toilet paper, or even worse, which is something I never did, which is packing in the toilet paper and then just leaving it out there, which is unfortunately what some people choose to do. And so I recognized that there was this squeamish factor out there. And I recognized that a lot of that had to do with what people were using, you know, just the idea of this bandana or a t-shirt, where you couldn't even really tell, like, where had you used it last? Did you lay it down in the dirt? Which side did you use? How do you keep your hands clean when you do it? Is it antimicrobial fabric? You know, those were all things that I thought in my mind, if I designed this as a real piece of gear, I could go the extra mile and make it intentionally designed for hygiene. Because I looked at all of my other gear that I had, which was a lot of gear and a lot of money that I had spent on gear, and realized that this one piece of fabric that I was putting in contact with arguably a sensitive part of my body looked like something I had pulled out of a rag bin at a Jiffy Lube. And, you know, here I was buying like a $500 tent and using this sort of gross looking piece of fabric as a pea cloth. And so I thought, I wonder if I could design this better. And initially, I did a little bit of research into it and kind of talked myself out of it, because for one, I didn't sew. I had no idea how to sew, no idea how to start a business. And then I looked at, oh man, this is going to cost a lot of money to get this started up. And then I think I went down the route of, nobody's ever going to buy this. Why would they buy this if they could just buy a bandana? Pretty much talked myself out of it before I could even get started. And then in January of 2017, something unexpected happened to me that sort of changed the trajectory of my life forever. My mom and my husband and I were snowshoeing up by Stevens Pass here in Washington State. It was a beautiful day, perfectly clear out, and it was about 10 degrees. It was frigid. And we were driving back home after this glorious day of snowshoeing. I was driving our truck and we hit a patch of black ice that I didn't see. And suddenly our truck was literally spinning in circles across the highway into the path, directly into the path of an oncoming semi truck that was coming in the opposite lane of travel. And I just remember that in that moment, it felt very surreal, very slow motion, but there was no fear. It was just this sort of weird suspension of time. And that moment, I was fortunate enough to be able to walk away from that. How? I can't really explain it to this day. But while I didn't sustain any physical injuries, I really feel like something very pivotal changed in my mind, because I sort of got home from that and looked at all the things in my life that I was very fearful about pursuing, you know, namely this whole dream that I had had of creating a career in the outdoor industry, which I had essentially talked myself out of. And I reflected back on that moment driving home, and I thought and had noticed, wait, there was no fear in a moment of literally looking at my own mortality. How is it that when I'm contemplating creating a pea cloth of all things, like, this is not serious. It's a pea cloth. It's not life or death. How is it that I'm physically unable to do anything or move forward with this? And I realized that the fears that I had, all these what ifs in my mind, they were just made up by me. And I, as soon as I recognized that, if you look at the trajectory of my life from that day when that incident spinning across Stevens Pass happened, it's just astonishing to me. Within 2 weeks, I had started an online hiking and backpacking group to teach hiking and backpacking. It was like the shackles of fear, I had just sort of broken out of them. And all of a sudden, there were just no limits. I had nothing to be afraid of. Like, everything felt possible. And I started this online group. Opportunities to do things in the outdoor industry just started coming to me in weird ways. Like, I was asked to be a gear tester for Backpacker Magazine. And I started, I was the Seattle area trail scout for Backpacker Magazine. And at the time I was still working as a railroad police officer. So I wasn't, you know, I hadn't left my job yet, but in the process of starting this hiking group online and beginning to run that and really immersing myself in the outdoor community, this idea of the pea cloth that I had had the year before came back, except now I wasn't really afraid to try. Like, I mean, realistically, all I had to do was borrow a sewing machine, learn how to sew a square, and just start testing things. And so that's what I did. I started making squares in my guest bedroom. And admittedly, they didn't look like squares in the beginning. They looked sort of like blobs because I couldn't sew. But gradually, I taught myself how to sew a square, and my husband was cutting squares of fabric for me on our kitchen table. I mean, it was just a true startup story of, you know, you're in the trenches. At 2 a.m, my husband was working night shift at the railroad. I eventually did leave my job working for the railroad and decided, you know what, I'm just going to go all in with this because that's the type of person that I am. I have to go, is either all in or I'll never let something be successful. So I had left my job at the railroad and my husband was working night shift, and I was, you know, at night listening to podcasts and just sewing squares, like dreaming that maybe someday people would be carrying this around on their backpack. And it has just been pretty exciting to watch it grow from, you know, just this little idea.
Because now it's almost become like a universal piece of gear when you talk to women who backpack. And I want to say, you know, it took the fear of knowing what fit, the difference between the fear of dying, which is it's a real fear, and a fear of failure, right? You had to see what the difference was in the two fears.
Yes. And they are very, very different fears. And really I thought to myself, okay, so my pea cloth idea doesn't work out. What's the worst that could happen? I'll still be here, you know. And I remember one night, I think I was among many nights where I was crying about, you know, having left my job. And when you leave your job to start a company, to design a square of fabric that's meant to absorb urine, I'm not going to lie and say that doesn't come with some doubts about yourself and your own sanity. But, you know, I think in the midst of one of those lower moments, my husband actually asked me, he said, okay, well, what if it doesn't work out? And I remember thinking, well, I mean, I guess I'll just have to trust that it was leading me somewhere better. And ultimately, Hula has worked out. It's been a really beautiful adventure. And it has also led me to other beautiful places and to meet beautiful people. And for me, that has been the most enjoyable part of it, is the connections. And the word Hula itself means community. And for me, when I envisioned this piece of gear at a very early stage, one of the original names that I had in mind for it was The Wink. I was, you know, trying to come up with the perfect name for the product, which is a lot more difficult than you would think. But the idea of The Wink was sort of playing on that, the way that Jeep drivers wave at each other or motorcycle riders wave at each other. There's this instant sense of a camaraderie or connection. And I wanted that to be the same way with this pea cloth, where if you were hiking on a trail and you saw somebody else with one of these, number one, it would be sort of an open invitation to talk about things that maybe hadn't been talked about in the past. And then number two, it's sort of this instant connection with somebody that maybe you don't know, and stories about folks who've met because they both had Hulas warm my heart. I've heard stories of people who were literally trekking in Peru and saw another person with a Hula cloth and ended up like making a new friend that way. And that's very cool.
Yeah. It's like, hey, you know, this little company I found online. Well, you found it too. Wow. And I can imagine, right? It's got to be kind of cool. You're in Peru and you're like, yeah, wow, we found the same company and we're, but it's not so small anymore. Like I said, it's almost become a universal piece of gear from what I could see with female hikers that I talk to and read about online. You talked about the conversation, right? The need to build the community. I had Lola Velas on about a month ago. She was the first female to hike the Eastern Continental Trail from the Florida Keys up into Labrador, Newfoundland, Canada. And she had mentioned your product, very fond of your product. But one of the conversations we talked about, and we actually did a second episode on menstruation on the trail, was that the need to have these conversations, that they haven't been occurring, and they need to.
Yeah. You know, I just taught a class on the four P's, you know, pooping, peeing, periods, and personal hygiene. And there was a couple hundred people that I've taught in the past just 2 weeks alone on these topics. And the thing that struck me the most about having these conversations and why it's so important, I shared with you that my first backpacking trip did not go very well because of my lack of knowledge about hygiene, and that I literally stole toilet paper from somebody. And I just remember feeling stupid and stressed out. Like, if I had to go to the bathroom, how was I going to handle this? I didn't have toilet paper. And nobody goes outside in the wilderness to sit there and worry about toilet paper. That's not why anybody, when you ask them what are their motivations for going out on a backpacking trip, nobody says to worry. And so had I been placed in a situation much earlier where this knowledge was available to me, or if it was something that was openly talked about by people, male or female or anybody, if it was just a normal thing to discuss, then I know for a fact that not only would I have gone into that trip more prepared, but I also would have had a much better time and sensed a much deeper connection to myself and nature in that experience, and not spent so much time in my head worried about, like, oh, I hope I don't, you know, maybe I shouldn't eat as much so that I can hold it until I get back to the car when I can get back to the porta potty. And it's really my hope that when we have these conversations around hygiene, that people can then go out into the backcountry. You know, it's not about whether or not they buy a Kula. It's really about whether or not they can have the experience that they want to in the backcountry, and that they can feel that sense of connection, and they can feel empowered and confident going out there, that they are prepared to make that as enjoyable as an experience as possible. Because ultimately, I think we all sort of deserve that when we go out there, that chance for peace and stillness that we're all looking for when we go outside.
My wife isn't a backpacker. She did do some camping, a little bit of hiking when she was younger. But when she heard about this interview and read about your company, she said, yeah, there's a lot of women that won't even say this is something that would keep them from going in the outdoors more than you would think.
You know, when I first started Kula, and when it was just a very new product before it had sort of become as well known as it is now, I had a woman email me, and she told me that the first time she used her Kula outside, that she cried because she had been intentionally dehydrating herself for most of her life on hikes so that she didn't have to pee, because she didn't really want to pee or feel comfortable, didn't really know how to handle it. And I just remember thinking how sad that was, and also how great that was. I mean, she wrote me this email basically saying that her entire experience in the outdoors was changed because of this little product. And, you know, for me, that goes so far beyond just the piece of gear and really into creating a sense of openness and connection, because ultimately, you know, we're all human. I often will joke that, you know, pooping and peeing are the great neutralizers. You could put anybody you want in the world up on some sort of pedestal, any celebrity, you know, sort of make them out to be this sort of higher than thou person. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, we all poop and pee.
That's right. Yeah, that's
and right. You know, it's the great neutralizer. It really is. And it evokes such a sense of compassion for other humans. And we're all so alike. And there is, through the discussion of hygiene, I think there's this unsaid element of recognizing the humanness in another person and seeing them for all of the messiness that sometimes hygiene can bring up, and saying, you know, we've all been there and it's okay. It's part of being human. And that's one thing that I always encourage when I teach my hygiene classes, is that if you go out into the backcountry and things don't go perfectly with your hygiene, it's a different environment than it is at your house. Like, you aren't alone. There's nothing that you need to feel ashamed of. I mean, I've probably had every bathroom mishap you could spell out, and here I am still willing to talk about it and hung out into the backcountry almost 2 decades later.
I think anybody who's done any amount of backpacking has a good story. I was interviewed on a podcast a couple of years ago, and the pre-interview they said, "Yeah, we always ask our guests, do they have a good poop story?"
I have many. I love it.
I said, well, I think that's something that universally we all have, but I've never been asked to share it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my hope is that with Kula and with being more open about it, that not that there's necessarily less peeing or pooping stories, but that maybe people don't feel so bad about them anymore. Or if they do happen, they know how to handle it in a way that's going to keep them clean and comfortable for the duration of their trip. That's the other piece of it, is that taking care of your health when you are out in the backcountry is maybe even more important, because things like chafing or infections, anything that could happen out there, is sometimes more difficult to deal with than it would be when you're at home. And so I think it's just doubly important to really take care when you're outside to use proper hygiene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And especially in the regions of our body that are so much more susceptible to bacteria, and even just a couple of days of not being able to address it properly can turn it into discomfort to something that might get you off the trail.
Exactly. Yeah. And that, in the history of Kula, that has been sort of the pattern I've noticed, is that people, it has always increased their ability to take care of their hygiene. And I'm really appreciative of that. I once went on a backpacking trip with my mom and my husband, and embarrassingly, I forgot my Kula cloth, which is, a bummer if you aren't the founder of the company. But as the founder of the company, I just felt so dumb. I mean, how do you forget your own product that you made? And I'm always packing extras too, because anytime I hit the trail, I always am anticipating to meet people out there and give them away and sort of be a little Kula trail angel. And it was that backpacking trip that I forgot the Kula on. It was the first time I had ever forgot it since I had created the product. And it was such a good reminder to me how big of a difference it made. The trip was entirely less comfortable for me, because trying to ration toilet paper squares and figure out how I was going to keep clean for 3 days became so much more of a challenge, and just made me more appreciative of the existence of Kula.
Did you come across anybody, and I'm the founder? No, really, I am. I don't have it with me, but I'm not lying.
Oddly enough, I don't think we came across many people on that trip. It's very funny, because as the founder of the company, I always find myself in situations where I don't see anybody when I'm hiking. And I don't know why. I do a lot of off-trail hiking, and that probably feeds into it. So a lot of the places I hike, there's very, very few people, because you'd really have to want to be where I am. And so I'm usually not hiking near crowds, but all of my friends will always tell me all the time, "Oh, everywhere I go, everybody has a Kula. You won't believe it. There's so many people with Kulas." And then I go out and go hiking and I don't see anybody. the other funny thing about being the founder of Kula Cloth is that when I am hiking, I'm always very, very hyper aware of if anybody else has one, because it turns me into sort of a little bit of a blubbering fangirl when I see somebody who has one. It's just so exciting for me to see, even now, 5 or 6 years into this adventure. When I see somebody with a cool cloth, it feels like my heart just stops. Like, it's so exciting. But I noticed that when I hike, I have this sort of funny tendency that every time somebody passes me, I'm always looking behind me. And so I look like I'm just checking everybody out who walks past, but really I'm looking at their backpack. But if you didn't know what I was doing, I would just look like sort of this trail creeper out there.
And that's got to be really flattering. I mean, because you put everything you had into this. You took a chance. Like I said, you basically talked yourself out of it. Until you realized that, the fear of failing is really, an irrational fear. So yeah, I can't imagine when you go online and see somebody using it, or go on to YouTube and hear about somebody talking about it. That's just got to be such a great feeling.
It is. It's very surreal. In the early days of Kula, especially when it was brand new and people were much more resistant to the idea because it was so new. I mean, people had done pea cloths, but that was mostly for like the through hikers were the real big proponents of pea cloths. I don't think the idea of a pea cloth had really hit sort of like mainstream hiking community yet until Kula kind of came into the world. And I still remember people posting about it in Facebook groups, and I would just get this pit in my stomach because invariably there would be people who didn't understand the product and thought it was stupid. And I would just read the comments and feel like I was going to pass out because, on one hand, I literally put everything. I mean, I couldn't possibly comprehend the amount of blood, sweat, and tears, not literally, except with the tears, that I have poured into doing this. But when you create something, it really is this very, very intense process of almost, it feels like just taking a piece of your heart out, turning it into fabric, and then just showing it to the whole world and saying, I hope you like it. And so in the beginning, especially, it feels very personal when people don't like it. And as time has gone on, I have learned to not take things so personally, because otherwise you'll just sort of live in this state of constant distress. And ultimately, one of the things that I love the most about the world is that people are free to love and not love whatever they want to not love. And there is always a place in my heart for people who don't understand or don't love the Kula cloth. And I think that's great. And then there's a place in my heart for people who do. And I don't think there's any right or wrong there. It's just personal preference. But it does feel really good to see people using it. And most importantly, to know that they are having a more connected, more comfortable time in the backcountry, and that this product has just contributed just a tiny bit to that, feels really good. It feels like a little ripple of goodness that goes out into the world. And that's something that I've really thought about a lot with Kula, is how can I make it more than just about this piece of gear? And so everything that we do is always very, very intentional, whether that's the messaging on our website or the little postcards that we send out to people. It's, each time that you have the opportunity to acknowledge another person, that's a moment where you can add something to their life. And for me, that's just such a beautiful gift, whether that's a little poem that makes them smile or laugh, or a little note written in their order, or a sticker that they enjoy having. There's like these little ways that you can reach out and kind of touch metaphorically another human. And that has sort of become for me the bigger purpose. There's the gear on one hand, but then what good can that do? And it excites me more than anything to hear stories about people who will say things like, well, all I wanted was a pea cloth, but now I'm dancing every single day. And, mm-hmm. you know, because we do all this other stuff with Kula, or now I, you know, all I wanted was a pea cloth, but then I found this meditation page on your website and I, you know, I did a meditation and it just changed the course of my day. And so looking sort of outside the box, like how can we be more than just a gear company and be a company that is more focused on this overall sense of goodness for others? And that is what gets me really excited now.
I notice there's a variety of patterns you have. Some of them kind of interesting and even comical. So I
yeah,
guess you could say.
We you know, it's funny. We started with just one. It was a galaxy pattern, which is funny because the galaxy has sort of become the motif of everything we do. And I don't even think we sell the galaxy print specifically anymore, but we started with galaxy print. And then we had a second print called Nice Axe, which was the very first print that I ever commissioned from an artist. It's a, has an ice axe on it and sort of this icy blue back. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, I'm going to hang this sort of clothesline up in my office. And every single Kula print we ever make, I'm going to do one on it. And, you know, eventually it'll be like 20 feet long or something like that. And 5 or 6 years later, oh my goodness, I lost track so quickly because it was like once we figured out how to get the production process down and figured out a system and a method for taking art and turning it into a Kula, then it kind of opened the floodgates. And we started doing custom Kulas for other brands. We started doing individual custom Kulas that we actually just print in our little office for customers. So if anybody wants to get their face printed on a Kula cloth, we've done that. Or maybe just the face of a friend, we've done that too. And then we do an artist series, which directly benefits the artist who does the design. We run a design contest every year. This year it'll be in March. And then we also work with a lot of nonprofits doing Kulas for a cause. And those are Kulas that will typically give a direct portion of the profits back to some sort of a nonprofit that, that benefits from it. And those are really exciting. We've done a lot of work with different trail organizations. We did the Pacific Northwest Trail. We've done Grand Staircase, Escalant, partners. We've done a bunch of outdoor organizations, a bunch of organizations that are helping people get outdoors. And so it really feels like for somebody who started as a park ranger wanting to give back to that outdoor community, now through Kula, I'm able to still do that in a different and even a bigger way than I was as a park ranger, and still able to work with a lot of the parks, the local parks here in Washington State and the national forests, helping them provide education to their clientele. It's just been sort of a full circle thing, somehow oddly revolving around toilet paper for me, but.
Right, well, yeah, I'm looking at this and I remember when Leave No Trace first became like an official thing, right? When you had the Leave No Trace organization start, which was, I think, about 98, 97, somewhere in that mm-hmm. neighborhood. And they talked about the toilet paper. But you seem to be maybe taking it to the next step, the next level, and saying, wait a minute, there's, you know, here's an answer.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is an answer. And I love to think that Kula can also be this gateway for folks, because it's such an approachable way to leave no trace. I mean, once you try using a Kula, it's easy to use. The benefits of it are very obvious very quickly. Even the people who are initially grossed out by it after they've tried it, 99% of them get it. And they're like, oh, that wasn't gross. That was easier than actually using toilet paper. But hopefully, you know, you have somebody who is now taking this extra step to use a pea cloth, how can that also translate into other ways to reduce waste in their life? You know, those folks are now going to be far less likely to leave anything out on the trail and far more likely to be better stewards of the land. And so the thing that I love about Kula is that it isn't coming at anybody from sort of this shame tactic of don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. It's more of this conversational piece where by its existence on somebody's backpack, if somebody doesn't know what it is and they point at it and ask, there's this instant conversation that happens that would not have otherwise happened. Because if you just saw a bandana hanging on somebody's backpack, chances are you probably aren't going to ask about it. But if you see some sort of strange looking triangle hanging there that has beautiful art on it, you might actually ask and say, hey, what is that thing? And now you have the opportunity as the person who's carrying that kula to become another voice for Leave No Trace. So I really feel like in some way, you know, since the birth of Kula, I don't know how many Kulas are out there in the world right now. I know that it's hundreds of thousands of them, but I like to think that there are now hundreds of thousands of stewards out there who have taken Leave No Trace to the next level. And by default, you know, most people who are willing to hang a visible pea cloth on their backpack are going to very likely be open to talking about that with others. And to me, that's really exciting because think about, you know, I do a lot of work with Leave No Trace right now, and they have a few trainers that travel around the country providing training for Leave No Trace. But they don't have, Leave No Trace doesn't have the budget to have 300,000 employees out there training people. But if you can get a product into people's hands that automatically opens up a conversation about Leave No Trace, now you have 300,000 stewards out there who anytime that conversation comes up, it's just like this automatic thing. And we always joke, when we first started Kula, we had this sticker that we made that just said, ask me about my pea cloth on it. Uh-huh. And people who have Kulas love to talk about them. I mean, it's sort of a joke in the Kula community is how much people talk about their pea cloths. Mm-hmm. And I love knowing that because I just think about how many people didn't know how to handle toilet paper in the backcountry. And I understand that there's probably people out there who leave toilet paper out there knowingly, like knowing that it's probably not the right thing to do. I also do believe that there are people who simply have not been exposed to knowledge about Leave No Trace, didn't have the opportunity for whatever reason to be exposed to that education. And so they probably have, in some cases, good intentions, or they've been told that the toilet paper will just disintegrate. And so they pee and they leave it out there and they think it's okay. And being able to give that education to more people by leading by example, I think is really powerful, rather than just sort of being told what to do or what not to do.
And it goes back to this, these conversations need to take place, and for a number of reasons, and this is one of them, because this is something that commonly comes up with guests I have on this podcast, is when we talk Leave No Trace, are we, you know, 90% of the time we feel like we're preaching to the choir, but mm-hmm. if somebody's got a Kula cloth on their backpack and somebody says, hey, what is that? And then all of a sudden, right now you've like led into a very, you know, not preachy, but, you know, Leave No Trace, you know, that. So, you know, this maybe helps bridge that gap. If we're not preaching to the choir, we're maybe preaching to somebody that really consciously wants to make an effort to up their game when it comes to Leave No Trace.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, think about that. I was a park ranger, and the moments when I was telling people that they shouldn't be doing something, a lot of times those conversations didn't go really well, because even if the person knows that they're doing something they weren't supposed to do, there is that instantaneous defensive response that sort of puts up an invisible barrier that doesn't necessarily allow them to receive the information in the way that it was intended. And so if you can get people information in a non-confrontational manner, or in a non, like not through telling them that they're dumb or that they should know better or that they're doing things wrong, if you're just providing them information, that actually is empowering to them, because they feel like they've just discovered this new way of handling things on the trail. And I feel like people in that situation are going to, you're going to have a much higher rate of compliance with a good interaction rather than a bad interaction and making somebody feel horrible.
I totally agree. Adults mostly don't want to be preached to. They don't want to be made to feel stupid, or they don't know what they're doing out there. You get somebody that's been maybe day hiking for maybe a couple of decades, but just really isn't all that familiar with Leave No Trace. I live in New York. You don't want to be too confrontational.
No, No, and especially, I feel like especially about toilet paper. I mean, that could go poorly.
Right. Anastasia, I want to ask you this. When you quit your job as a railroad law enforcement agent, and you start telling families and friends, I'm starting a business. Well, what is your business, Anastasia? I'm going to create a pea cloth for female hikers. I don't know if that's how you put it, but what was the reaction or responses you're getting from family and friends?
So in the very beginning, I did not specifically have the idea for Kula Cloth had already happened, but I didn't know that that was exactly where I was headed. So I told people that I was leaving my job to start a career in the outdoor industry, which is unbelievably vague and was code for, I have no clue what I'm about to do, but I really believe that this is possible. And I had done a lot of internal reflection and work. And I mean, I'm talking meditation and gratitude and appreciation. And I mean, I really threw myself into learning how to create something from an idea. And I would drive around in my police car, and I would just remember patrolling, and I would be talking out loud to myself. And I would be saying, I'm starting a career in the outdoor industry. I have no idea what it is yet, but I know that it's coming, and I'm really excited about it. And I would just say it to myself over and over and over again. And eventually, you know, I started to believe it, and opportunities started to happen. And I finally got to this point where I left my job. And I come from a very traditional upbringing. My dad, I would say, is a pretty traditional guy who's raised in a very traditional way, where things like stability and having a regular paycheck were things that were very, very important to him. And right off the bat, people did start to project their own fears onto me. And in the beginning of having an idea, that is very scary, because there's no proof of what you're doing. I mean, I didn't have anything to show for anything I had done. I had no proof it was going to work. I believed that it was going to, but people immediately just start to pepper you with all of their fears, as if I hadn't also thought about them too. And I will say that none of them were helpful at all, because if anything, they just added to the anxiety that I was already feeling. I understand why they did it, and I understand that it was coming from a place of love, but part of my own process was learning how to let go of their fears and realize that I didn't have the bandwidth to carry my own and theirs at the same time. And when I did that, I was able to look at them through a perspective of recognizing that they just loved me and cared about me. But ultimately, I decided that I need to trust myself in this situation. I need to follow my own heart, my own intuition. I know where I'm going. I know this is possible for me, and I just have to do it. Because I had lived in the world of what ifs and shouldas and wouldas for 20 years. And that hadn't worked for me. I hadn't ever done anything that I had wanted to do, because I was always just too afraid to do it. And so once I realized that, it sort of got to the point where it was scarier not to try than it was to try. And ultimately, you know, people would say sort of horror stories to me, oh, all businesses always fail, or what's your plan B, or what does your husband think about this, or you just need to go get a real job, or nobody's ever going to buy that. You know, when I first had the idea for Kula Cloth, I was told nobody's going to buy it. Why would people buy that if they could just buy a bandana? Nobody would buy a pea cloth with art on it. Putting art on a pea cloth is overkill. You know, I was told things. And I really feel like if you are somebody with an idea, that's part of the process, because anybody doing anything where there's no proof of what's going to happen or if it's going to work out, it is bound to stir up fears, not only in yourself, but in others. And so recognizing and sort of reframing the experience of those fears as like, oh, this is a sign that like I am onto something new here and something good could really come of this, because I am now embarking into the unknown, which is a place where everything is possible. And where I lived before was a familiar, and there wasn't much interesting stuff going on there that I was doing. So why not try it? And it's been kind of fun. My dad, who was ultimately very, very fearful for me, what's really kind of fun is we actually got to do a collaboration on a Kula cloth. He is the president of a small nonprofit that is a fly fishing nonprofit in Maryland. And we did a Kula for a cause that benefits Antietam fly anglers. And I recently got to send my dad's nonprofit a check. I believe it's like the largest donation that their tiny nonprofit has ever received because of selling these Kula cloths. And so it's been really fun. Now that I'm doing it, obviously there's proof of success that it worked. And so I don't get as much of the doubts anymore. The early days were completely a different story. But I will say that if anybody out there who's listening to your podcast has a friend who's in those early stages, you have the opportunity to really be, and what I like to call an uncommon gem, by not needing to understand what they want to do, not needing to see the full vision because only they can, but having the opportunity to, instead of peppering them with what could happen and what could go wrong, just saying, you know, I don't know what adventure you're about to embark upon, but I bet it's going to be really exciting and interesting, and I will be here to support you no matter what. And I really feel like we each have the opportunity to uplift people in our daily lives. And the more we do that, the more other people get the chance to succeed and thrive, and the better we all are in the end. So I am so glad that I had the chance to walk past all of those fears and doubts of others, because ultimately it was just a beautiful part of the experience of like trusting myself and proving myself right ultimately.
It takes courage, and I really love your message, right? You know, do it. And look, if you had said, I'm designing a new backpack, a better backpack or a better tent, people might have said, oh, well, it's kind of risky to do, but yeah, I could get it. And you were an innovator.
A pea cloth was different.
Right. And when you're an innovator, when you're going out there on a limb, you're going to get your criticisms. You're going to get your people who are doubting. And as you said, sometimes they're doing it from the best places in your heart. They care about you. But as you pointed out, you know, follow your intuition, follow your heart.
Yeah. If you're being called in a direction, like if you have an idea and it is so strong that you can't ignore it, even if other people are telling you it's a dumb idea, come to me and I will tell you that it is not a dumb idea, because I really feel like so many people, I mean, I've talked to countless people about all the ideas that they have had. And this was a person like me too. I had ideas all through my childhood, all through college. I was always coming up with these ideas of things I wanted to do, and then either talking myself out of them or letting other people talk me out of them and why they wouldn't work. And that was just this repeating cycle. And Kula is the first time I didn't let anybody else, or most importantly, myself, talk me out of doing something. And it, I mean, the sometimes I am just astounded at the impact that saying yes to myself has had. Every so often I will be at an event, you know, we do events for Kula, and I think I was at an event in May, and there was, you know, 100 people there, and all these people come from all over the place to attend this event. And at some point in the middle of the event, I'm looking around and people are sort of scurrying around setting things up, and we've got people out there going on this quest, and people are solving puzzles and doing all this creative art. And it was just this sort of production. And I had this moment of thinking, at any point along the way, if I had said no to myself, not one of these people would be here today. And that is just so odd to think about sometimes, that like the impact that each of us has the ability to make in the world, to make it a better place. And I really think that it starts with saying yes to ourselves, and specifically to the ideas that like call to us, because those are the things that we usually talk ourselves out of. We say, oh, somebody's already doing it, or I can't, who am I to do this? I think it's Marianne Williamson who says, who are you to not do it? And I love that so much. And it's true. I wish that I had lived by that adage for the first, you know, few decades of my life. But ultimately, I came back to it. And I hope that others do too. And ultimately, I hope that the story of Kula and how it came to be can be that example for other people. You know, I don't have special skills more so than any other person on this planet. I have specific things that I'm good at, but so does everybody. You know, we all have our sort of unique spark that we bring to the world. And it is when we let that shine brightly that we sort of cast light everywhere we go. And I would love to see what that is for others. And I hope that Kula can be a little bit of a beacon to encourage other people. You know, they can look at me and say, oh, Anastasia was a railroad cop who started a peacock company. And believe you me, if I can figure it out, I'm totally confident that other people can too.
Anastasia was a railroad cop who started a peacloth company and didn't even know how to sew.
Not even a button. Yeah, no.
Right. I mean, you're not even somebody who liked to tinker with making your own gear or sewing things. That's what I find so incredible. It was your passion that drove this.
I actually, I know that you don't share a video of your podcast, but so maybe I can describe this with words here, but I brought a prop to show you. This is actually I'm holding up right now the first pea cloth that I ever made. This is my first attempt at a Kula cloth, and it looks sort of like 7 different shapes all in one. The seam has a hole in it. I mean, it looks nothing like the final product. And so everybody has to start somewhere. And I didn't start Kula where it is now. You know, people are now seeing me 6 years into the existence of Kula Cloth, and I would say maybe 8 to 10 years into my own sort of journey of looking, sort of turning inward and really asking myself what I wanted to do and contribute to the world. And I think it's easy to look at something that's far along and say, oh, I could never do that. But when you realize that it just started as a scrap of cloth, it doesn't seem so impossible then. And I could not have known all the steps along the way that it would take to get Kula to where it is now. I think it's Steve Jobs who famously said that you can never connect the dots forward, you can only connect them backwards. And it's only when you look back that you can see how everything lined up to get you where you are. But from sitting here right now, or from sitting where I was back in 2017, trying to sew a square for the first time, if you had asked me, how are you going to sell 300,000 of those things? I mean, I would have been so sort of stuck with fear that I wouldn't have even started, because I couldn't have possibly known the answer to that. How could I have predicted some of the wild stuff that I've done with Kula? It's unpredictable.
you held that up and showed it. It really makes me wish we were showing video on these interviews, and maybe one day I'll go back to doing that, because when you held that up, I said, that's inspiration, right? It looks like something a novice did, right? If you were just a novice seamstress playing around your sewing machine, it's not bad. But from there, and now have this company.
This company, and it's a lot of work, but it's a labor of love. And I feel really, really grateful that I get to do something that I care so much about. And I love that it's always growing and changing. And I love feeling like I have a blank canvas for ideas. For me, that's the most exciting thing. There's no ceiling to what I can create. I recently submitted my first patent application for a neck gaiter designed for people with long hair. When I started Cool Cloth, I never thought I'd be designing a neck gaiter. That was a surprise.
So that was going to be my next question, is any new products coming at us? And it sounds like you've got one in the works already.
The Rapunzel gaiter just launched in November, and it is a neck gaiter specifically designed for people with long hair. I ride a motorcycle, and through riding the motorcycle, I realized that my neck gaiter would never work, because I either had to tuck my braid into my jacket, which is uncomfortable and always snagged on the zipper, or I would sort of have to floop my braid over the jacket, which would lift up my neck gaiter and expose my neck to the wind. So one day I just cut slits in my fleece neck gaiter while I was riding the motorcycle, and I threaded my braid through them, and very quickly thought, wait, why is this not a thing? And I did some research. It wasn't a thing. I worked with a pattern maker, and we designed a pattern and submitted a patent application on it and started selling them in November. And so that's been really exciting. I also designed a pair of hiking underwear called pika pants that are sort of a cross between underwear and shorts. You could wear them as underwear, but you could also take your pants off. It was hot, and wear them as shorts. And then I'm in the process right now of finishing a design for my very first pair of hiking shorts, which is something that I wanted to design for a long time and, never knew how to do it. But now I don't really let not knowing how to do something get in my way, and I'm really excited to see what people think of them. So who knows what I will design next?
It sounds like it's almost comes a habit, right? I'm going to try something. I'm going to do something.
Yeah.
I'm going to try something different. That's just great.
That's great. I love it. I never get bored. And that's my favorite part of doing this, is like watching, having an idea and then watching it become real and getting to hold something that was once only this thought, right? Like thoughts become real. And that's so obvious when you're thinking about a product, but where I think it also translates into is just in life and our vision for our life as well. So if I can think of a pea cloth and then it can become real, can I also then think about something that I want to create in my life or something that I want to experience? And can that also become real through my focus on it? And that has been an exciting and intentional way to live my life. I feel like I led most of my life prior to Kula, very much on autopilot, very much reacting to what life seemed to throw at me, not realizing that I had any part in creating what I was experiencing. And now I feel like I live on the flip side where I recognize, no, I am an active participant in my life experience. And as a result of that, I get to decide and choose what I want to focus on and what I want to bring into my life. And that is a fun process. It's fun with gear and it's just fun. It's fun with life.
Anastasia, Allison, if we want to look up Kula Cloth and your products, how do we go about that? How can we purchase them and or follow you?
Yeah. So you could just go to our website, kulacloth.com, and our Instagram is just @cloth, and Kula is spelled KulaCloth. My personal Instagram, where I am sort of sporadic, is Anastasia.Allison. And then I also write a Substack called The Kula Diaries, where I share sort of all the ups and downs of being a gear company founder. I write a lot about how to create anything and a lot about mindfulness. And I even write an advice column on there. And you could just search for that on the Kula Cloth website as well.
We'll make sure we put links to all this in the description for this episode. Anastasia Allison, founder of Kula Cloth, thank you so much for coming on here and sharing this story with us.
Oh, you are so welcome. This has been such a delightful conversation. Just such a fun reflection about Kula. I obviously, you know, have a lot of strong and very endearing feelings towards it. And I was mentioning to you before we started recording that sometimes in the day-to-day of running a business, you forget that. And being able to talk about it and share it with other people really reminds me why I love it so much. And so I'm just grateful to you for the opportunity to get to experience such a deep feeling of gratitude for everything that has happened the past 6 years.
Well, thank you. Everybody, get outside, have some fun, and try to be safe.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe.
This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.